It is Tuesday. You are listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado, and we have a special session of the legislature going on, the Colorado Assembly, which means, what does that mean? That means nobody's life, liberty, or property are safe until this thing adjourns. Jason is on location doing his real job, so if you'd like to call in on today's show, 303-477-5600. We have in studio with us Senator Harvey and Representative Holbert, and I would like to welcome both of you to the studio. Representative Holbert, tell our listeners what district you represent.
House District 44 is Parker and Lone Tree, northern Douglas County. A large part of it is in the most powerful Senate district in the whole state, and I'll leave that to my senator.
So that would be you, Senator Harvey.
Thank you for having me tonight. I represent Senate District 30, which is all of northern Douglas County, Roxborough Park, Highlands Ranch, Lone Tree, and Parker.
Well, I'm going to ask you guys, who wants to start off? What on earth is going down at the Capitol?
I'll let Chris, since he had most of the fun over the last couple of days being in the House.
Well, civil unions went to the State Affairs Committee and failed to move out of that committee, lost on a 4-5 vote, and it has stalled there. So I know a lot of people have opinions on that bill, for and against, but that looks like the governor's keystone issue in his call probably is not going to proceed. And I think there were several hundred people, I know there were several hundred people down at the Capitol today for a celebration of traditional marriage, who are quite relieved at that. And I think that if the governor wants to pursue that, those who support civil unions ought to put it on the ballot, see what the voters have to say, because for me, that's where it came down, is we need to honor the last time the voters spoke on that issue, and that's where it turned out.
Well, I think it was a shame that the governor even had us in for a special session. He did it specifically for the civil unions bill. I would understand it if he knew that he had the votes, but he didn't have the votes. His party's in the minority in the House. If he wanted to be Speaker of the House, he should have run for the legislature and try to be his party's leader in the House of Representatives. But the fact is that Frank McNulty, a Republican from Douglas County, is the Speaker of the House, and the governor didn't have his votes. And it was a waste of about $75,000 of taxpayers' dollars. He threw on about six other bills that got killed in the process of the last couple nights of the session running out the clock, but even most of those bills didn't make it out. I think only the water projects bill, which is required pretty much by the Constitution, and
unemployment insurance
reform, which is important, but it's certainly not a statewide emergency to call a special session. And then Senator Cadman had a bill talking about regulations of mobile machinery, bobcats, if you will, and that's certainly not an emergency situation that would justify the governor bringing us back into session. So I think it was a waste of taxpayers' money.
Well, this whole thing, in my mind, was a setup from the beginning. And I'll just, you know, give you guys my two cents and then see what you think of it. But this was SB 2, okay? And we've talked about it a lot on this radio station, on Grassroots Radio. We've talked about it over and over and over again. But it was SB 2, which means it was the second bill dropped in the Senate.
The very first day.
Yeah, the very first day. 3 months later, they finally get around to pushing it over to the House of Representatives. All kinds of wonderful things went on, but if the Democrats in the Senate were serious about it and didn't want to play games with it, wanted a straight up or down vote, number one, they wouldn't have given us a bullying bill as it was. Because if you read this thing, it wasn't about civil unions. It was about bullying religious institutions into doing what goes against their religious doctrine. But that being said, they played all these wonderful games with it. Then, the last night of the session, they tried to pull a fast one on Speaker McNulty. He stood up for it, and he said, look, we're at an impasse. We're done. The next day, Hickenlooper has to step into the fray. And think about this. He's been governor for, what, 2 years now? He has yet to expend a nickel, a penny of political capital, and all of a sudden he goes all in on this one. I mean, that to me is just remarkable.
Ken, I appreciate you making that observation, because it's a story that the press hasn't spent a lot of time explaining to the public, and that is that the civil unions bill sat in the Senate for 108 days. It comes over to the House, and when we count the 120-day session, that includes weekends and holidays. That isn't just work days. So we have 12 days to move that bill through the House. Four of those days, at least, were weekend days. One of those days was the last day of the session, where we couldn't work on that bill anymore, and one of those days was Tuesday, last Tuesday, when things blew up on the House floor. So you distill that down, and I think you come out with about 6 or 7 days that the House had to move that bill through. If a listener out there is a supporter of civil unions, please take that into consideration. We had about 6 days in the House to move it through three committees and get it to the floor, and the protest that the Democrats put up on that Tuesday night was, there's about 30 bills on the second reading calendar there, move this one that just came through its last committee, move it to the top of the list. Can that be done? Yes, it can. But it was frustrating to have all of this other important legislation for consideration on the House and have the demand be put this before everything else.
Especially when those other bills died on the calendar because of their demand. But it gets worse than that. I mean, the Democrats were in control of the House and the Senate and the governor's office for 2 years over the 4 years that Governor Ritter was there, and they never once introduced this bill. If it was so important for the citizens of Colorado that it rises to the level of an emergency for the governor to call us back in for a special session to pass civil unions, why didn't the Democrats do that when they had control of the House, had control of the Senate, had control of the governor's office under Governor Ritter? And the reason why they didn't do that is, one, Governor Ritter would not sign that bill because of his religious convictions as a Catholic, but also because the voters have said, no, we do not want civil unions. They voted for that in 2006. This is simply a political ploy to make the Speaker of the House, Frank McNulty, look bad, and to promote President Obama's reelection, because they have to win Colorado, and they need some very wealthy pro-homosexual activists' money pumped into Colorado to be able to get the victory here in Colorado for the president, and that's the only reason why they did it.
Well, namely Pat Stryker and Tim Gill. I mean, I've got no problem naming those guys, but if you take a look at it from a 35,000-foot perch, North Carolina, Tuesday last week, just voted civil unions down. Then you've got Barack Obama coming out and saying, oh, I support gay marriage. Then the next day, the very next, and this is happening all over the country, this war on women, it's all part of the same assault on the First Amendment. The next day, the very next day, Hickenlooper calls a special session. I can't prove it. I have no idea. I'm guessing here, but I just believe somebody from the White House called Hick and said, "Dude, you better do this."
I don't think that's a stretch of the imagination at all.
I don't think there was a phone call. I think they were in the office.
Really?
Could be. One of the things that I've reminded people who've been upset about civil unions on one side or the other is that, as a Republican, as a member of the Liberty Movement, I think our objective is to get more votes than Barack Obama, and I believe that our opposition's objective is to distract us from our goal. And we saw that with we saw that with Sandra Fruk. Is that how you say her last name? Manufactured war on women. We saw that with Trayvon, a tragic incident in Florida.
Yeah, we have our first white Hispanic now.
And now we have this with gay marriage and civil unions. Some take exception when we call it gay marriage, but I really see this so-called civil unions bill as it really amended the statute pertaining to marriage. And I know Speaker McNulty's taken a lot of grief for calling it gay marriage, but pointing to the Fox report that we saw today, I think 7% of voters nationally in this poll identified gay marriage as their top issue. You know, I think this is probably not going to be the deciding factor. It's the economy, as Bill Clinton reminded us. It's the economy.
Well, yeah, jobs. And here's the thing. I mean, there were three different provisions in this bill that really bothered me. Number one, it forced religious counselors to counsel gay and lesbian couples, even if they were Catholic, not funded by the state or not funded by any public funds whatsoever. Then it also forced those same institutions or different institutions, let's say you had a Catholic adoption agency funded solely by the church, it then had to, it was forcing them to consider gay and lesbian couples as well. And also it removed the definition from the Colorado Constitution. There we have a marriage amendment. It removed the definition of gay marriage or of marriage between a man and a woman. So it did all those three things. Now, Senator Mitchell had put some amendments forth in the Senate. Then Representative Looper had put some through in committee in the House. That all went away when the special session was called, right?
Well, Senator Mitchell tried to do it in the Senate,
well, they
and
got
it didn't
killed.
Get on.
Right.
They did get on in the House originally, but they were not in the bill that got killed last night in the House. But I'm not going to dance on the head of a needle on this. It was gay marriage. It had the language of spouse throughout. It had the language
more
of
than
spouse
20 times
throughout.
Yes.
And then it had a section about what do you do with a child that is dealing with a divorce situation or a marriage situation where they're not yet married and you have a child. And they went to statute that discusses that, and it's talking about marriage throughout that portion of the statute. And if an individual got married, two individuals of same sex got married in another state, that marriage was recognized in Colorado as a civil union. So it's just semantics for them to say that it's not marriage when they are recognizing other states' marriages as civil unions here in Colorado.
When we come back, we're going to talk about a little bit of the fallout that has now started. We all knew it was coming, but you're not going to believe this. I'm just going to let it play, Zach. Let that sucker play. You are listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado. This is Ken Clark, and I have been invaded. I'll tell you what, I just don't know what to make of what's going on in the studio right now. I've got Senator Grantham, Senator Neville, Senator Harvey, and Representative Holbrook.
And the Ramones playing
and
on the bumper.
Ramones.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. Representative Holbrook and I had a long discussion about the Ramones on Facebook one time. That was a lot of fun. We had been talking about the special session. We'd been talking specifically about the civil unions, and I should have reminded you not to grab the microphone, but that's all right. But anyway, we were talking about the civil unions, and we're going to move on from that in a minute. But as a result of Speaker McNulty putting the civil unions bill in the quote-unquote kill committee, there's been some fallout. And so today on Colorado Peak Politics, there was a headline, and this is a reporter from the Pueblo Chieftain, political beat writer, asks Speaker McNulty, if he's okay with being a bigot. This is a beat reporter, an issues reporter. This guy isn't an op-ed reporter. And, you know, it's not very often that I'm going to defend Speaker McNulty on Grassroots Radio, but this is one of those times. Last night, the political reporter for the Pueblo Chieftain, Patrick Malone. Patrick, if you're listening, I dare you to call in. Forgot his job for a minute and suddenly thought he was an activist or an editorial writer, not a reporter, in crossing the line. Malone asked Speaker Frank McNulty, who blocked the civil unions bill, if he was concerned at all that this seals your legacy as a bigot. Anybody?
It doesn't surprise me. I mean, honestly, I was going to bring in pom-poms this week and hand them out to all of the Capitol Hill reporters because they have been not objective reporters. They have been cheerleaders for this issue since day one. On the floor on the House, I've been around the Capitol a long time. I've never seen press conferences being done on the floor of the House. And they were all screaming and yelling, why won't you let this come to a vote? Why won't you let this come to a vote? And it was embarrassing to watch the press corps lower themselves to that level.
Well, it gets even worse. You've got Representative Don Corum's son. They're writing articles about him talking to the press now as well in a conversation that he had with his father. And, I mean, if that's not scraping the bottom of the barrel, and this is just the beginning, guys. I mean, this is just the beginning. I have a feeling that they are going to pull out all the stops because, Representative Holbrook, you called it Exactly right. This is all nothing but a distraction.
That's right. Our goal is to get more votes than Barack Obama, and their goal is to distract us from our goal. And they're very good at that, but we just have to stay focused. And I wish the press would have taken time to come out to the Lincoln Day dinner in Douglas County last Saturday night, because Speaker McNulty didn't just get a standing ovation. There were people jumping up and down and patting him on the back. And I've never been so proud of Frank McNulty in my life, but I am proud of my speaker.
Well, I got to tell you, I normally don't defend the guy, but I've got to on this one.
Ken, I kind of wonder if Patrick Malone would have made the same statement, or did even ask the same question to Senator Carroll when she's running her Senate Bill 93, wondering if she's going to have a legacy, or she's worried about her legacy as a bigot for what she's doing to hospitals and to private religious hospitals. Doesn't that make her a bigot as well?
Remind our listeners what Senate Bill 93 did.
Senate Bill 93 was going to require religious institutions and hospitals to post the services that they do not provide, which is targeted specifically at Catholic hospitals and is targeted specifically at abortion issues and other life issues. This was an attack on their ability to simply provide or not provide, and it was directed at those religious institutions because of their religion.
You're listening to Senator Grantham, and real quick, Senator Grantham, tell our listeners what district you represent and where it is.
Gladly. Senate District 2, which currently is Southeast Colorado, and it is reformed into a Central Mountain District in Park, Teller, El Paso, Clear Creek, and Fremont.
All right, very good. So, Senator Neville, you haven't spoken up yet, so I'm going to get your take on all this.
That's unusual that I haven't spoken up yet.
Well, and what district do you represent?
Senate District 22, which is South Jeffco. No matter what these guys tell you, it's still the best district. It's the Liberty District, so South and West Jeffco.
So what's your take on all this train wreck?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm extremely proud of what the House did and what the Speaker did, and I believe that we can all stand behind him, and I believe that there's a huge miscalculation that the left has made on this issue. And I think it's starting to take place in the polls and the data that's coming out, and I believe that if they thought this was a winning issue, they're in for a rude awakening.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. And if you take a look at Colorado polls, and I normally don't bring those guys up very often, but they don't much care for me and Jason. But there's a headline that the kill committee actions may lead to death of GOP control in the House. Now, we do have Representative Hulbert in here, and you had talked about a Fox News poll that 7% of the American public actually care about this issue.
Well, specifically, they identify it as their top issue. So I don't want to discount this. 7% is just that many people care about this. 7% in the poll identified it as their top issue. Clearly, the jobs in the economy, getting the economy back on track, getting more people working and earning income, that is by far the biggest agenda item. And I think we can show success in the House and the Senate on tax relief, business personal property tax relief. If we have time, I want to give shout out to Commissioner Joe Rapella and Senator Mark Sheffield for their work on House Bill 1029. But there are success stories in this session. I think 98 of us out of the 100 in the legislature voted for that bill. There are success stories, but for some reason we keep seeing these divisive issues, trying to find traction, trying to draw the attention away from the fact that this November a new president will be elected, in my opinion.
Well, you say for some reason. We know exactly what the reason is, and that is divide and conquer. I mean, look at it. We've got the war. We've got rich against poor. We've got black against white. We've got Latino against whichever they pick today. We've got men against women. We've got the war on women. We've got contraception. We've got abortion on demand. We've got now civil unions. I mean, you name it. And it's just getting started. This is going to be the ugliest 6 months we've ever seen. So, Senator Harvey, let me throw it to you. As far as the special session is concerned, what exactly was the overall outcome? I mean, we talked about the different bills. Let's.
Well, you go through your list that you just talked about. Divide. I don't really think that's what their goal was. I think their goal was to energize and motivate their base. Because the homosexual community, 99% of them are going to vote for Obama no matter what. The black community, they vote for the Democrat Party 80%, no matter what. What they're trying to motivate their base. I think where they miscalculated is pushing same-sex marriage this close to the election, because what it did was motivate our base. And I believe that it got people of faith off the couch and involved in politics right when we needed them to be involved, where in the past they've been quiet, they've been sitting back, they've been trying to work, they've been trying to keep their jobs intact and their homes intact. But now they're looking at an attack on this country and an attack on this culture, and I think they're getting off the couch and ready to take, you know, take this seriously.
Well, Senator Grantham, I wanted to ask you, there were a certain number of bills that were included in this special session, and when we come back, I'm going to ask you to list those, and let's talk about the ones and find out whether or not we just blew $75,000 of Colorado taxpayer money for what? Grassroots Radio Colorado. If you would like to join us on today's program, I recommend that you do. 303-477-5600. The studio is full of a lot of, okay, elected officials. We've got Senator Grantham, Senator Neville, Senator Harvey, and Representative Hulbert. And Senator Grantham, I was going to start with you. The special session, let's just talk about it. There were seven different categories, right? And a bunch of different bills. Were there seven? What were they? How'd they fare? What happened?
Seven items on the call from the governor's executive order. We ended up with, I think, 11 different bills over the two houses. Some of them were obviously copies of the others on the other side, a little bit different here and there. I think at the end of the day, maybe get a nod from these guys, but I think three altogether are actually going to survive out of the 10. But the signature piece of legislation that brought all this about, and I know you guys have already talked about this today, is dead as a doornail. And so why are we here? Well, to pass apparently some legislation that could have and should have obviously passed on its own, except for the theatrics that were brought up by the other side in order to pass their and the governor's signature piece of legislation. All for the bargain basement price of $23,448
a day. Signature legislation, radical
yes.
Social agenda legislation.
Yes. Yeah, calling it like he sees it. And
well,
I agree.
I mean, Senator Harvey's never one to mince words. So, yeah, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we don't pull any punches here.
And you know, it's the same old thing with the governor. I think you guys have mentioned this as well, that we start off the entire year with the state of the state, and he's only taken one stand in 2 years, and it's been to pass this piece of legislation. Then he doubled down in the last week, calling us back here for a special session, and still couldn't pull it together in order to get it passed for the princely sum of $75,000 over these 3 days.
I can tell you, Medicaid reform, para reform, all of the regulatory reform bills that Senator Grantham and I sat and watched killed day after day, week after week, in state veterans in the Senate. None of those things seemed to bother the governor, but you know, this civil unions bill really stuck in his craw.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I have never been so surprised. Well, you know, let me rephrase that. I wasn't that surprised, but it's still, I find it remarkable that the governor would, for the first time in his entire tenure as governor, pick this issue to, I mean, he hasn't spent a nickel of political capital, and now he's coming out with howitzers. I mean, it's remarkable.
Well, it is interesting to look back a year when we were dealing with reapportionment or redistricting. The House passed, as is required by the Constitution, our redistricting map for Congress, and the Senate didn't pass that. I truly wish, even if he had been opposed to my perspective, I truly wish the governor had exerted acquitted himself a bit more a year ago. But again, as you've already observed, here he comes on this issue that I don't think it's going to gain the traction that the Democrats thought that it would.
Well, it's not only that. We only have two constitutional requirements as legislators. One is to pass a balanced budget, and the other is to pass a redistricting bill. That's it. And we failed, and on the night that we failed, the Democrats filibustered their own bill for 3 hours until we ran out the clock. But you didn't hear the governor come down and try to get some compromise together. You didn't say, I'm going to threaten a special session and bring you guys back to do your constitutional duty. No, he did that on his radical social agenda, brought us back into special session because the Speaker of the House did what he thought was appropriate as the Speaker of the House. And then to have the media totally ignore what the Democrats did on redistricting and was just they played along with the Democrats to get it to go to the Supreme Court and have the court draw the maps. Here they are with pom-poms in their hand cheerleading all the way on this issue.
Well, yeah, and if we go back to the reapportionment and redistricting, I think Brandon Schaefer, the president of the Senate, he figured that he would have friendly courts, and he figured that he was going to be able to get his maps through the courts. And I mean, I remember that. That was, oh my God, that was a bunch of just backroom dealing, and, you know, they would make the Republicans do one thing and then not give the Republicans any time to respond to a map, and then they'd change everything and say, oh, gee, here it is, as you're voting on it. That was just pathetic. It was pathetic. And that is one of two, like you had mentioned, Senator Harvey, constitutional requirements that the Assembly has. Couldn't get it done with the Senate. Just couldn't get it done.
I was just going to add, we talked about it a little bit in the break, the cost. The $23,448 that it costs each day in order to run this. Had a really interesting conversation via Twitter and Facebook last night with some folks that seem to think that since we have this budgeted, and for those that don't know the mechanics of this, we have a 120-day session, but we budget for 135 days to account for the possibility of 15 days of special session. If we don't go to special session, we obviously don't spend the money. Well, somehow it got out there that because it's budgeted, this isn't costing us any money. It's a miracle.
It's not like real money.
It floated down from the money tree, apparently, and we're able to spend this money without, with impunity. And the amazing conversation was, I actually called him out on this. It was a reporter who said it first, and then said this first. Called him out on it, and then that conversation started and deteriorated from there. But I was immediately attacked as a bigot and as a Republic thug because I called him out on the fact that this is actually costing us money because it's budgeted. It apparently doesn't cost us any money.
Well, but Democrats are the only ones that think that way. If the money is there and you don't spend it, you've done something wrong. Democrats are the only people on the planet that can increase a budget year after year and somehow, well, let's take baseline budgeting for an example. It's a what? 7.2% annual increase in the budget. If you cut it back from 7.2% increase to 7% increase, that's a cut in spending. Democrats are the only people on the planet that think that way. I just wonder a lot if they just, you know, there was something in there. Maybe they had too much lead in the water where they were growing up. They got dropped when they were kids. I don't know.
Well, I think it's important for the listeners to understand exactly what this does cost. And I appreciate Senator Grantham mentioning the
23,448.
For those of us who are within 50 miles of the Capitol, the in-town, not out-state legislators, I'm taking home a whopping $45 a day to drive down to the Capitol. I do get mileage. I think it's about $18.50. Senator Grantham, I think, is about $150 a day, I think.
Yeah.
And I think it's helpful for your listeners, the liberty-minded people out there, to understand sort of another reminder, we're not Congress. We're not making $175K a year. And, you know, I would much rather be out earning a living in my own business than driving down for another 3 days ways to pass, it looks like, three or four bills.
Yeah, and so let's talk about those bills. There were a bunch of them that came through. Most of them have died, right? So we did this whole special session thing for the death and funeral of a couple of bills, right?
Correct. The most important one, I think, was the water projects bill, and I think it went through the first time during regular session without any opposition in either House or committees or anything.
And explain what that is.
The water projects bill. Multiple projects, money that is, in well, part of it is for actually loans that are used for water projects throughout the state, be it, I think it can be used for municipal projects as well as for
special district projects.
Special district projects and things like that. I mean, this is an important bill. And bipartisan, everyone realizes, you know, water is obviously a very precious commodity to this state, and this is a necessary mechanism for us to, in order to build our infrastructure and to help our other localities, municipalities, special districts build up the infrastructure. So without controversy, and it should have sailed through. We were driving in, and I heard Representative Hulbert talk about trying to leapfrog that one bill ahead of everything else. And this is one of those that they were trying to leapfrog and using these their tactics and in order to leapfrog. And this is one of them that got caught in that in the wake. And it should have been sailed through last week. But it got caught up in the shenanigans.
And so they're basically using blackmail, extortion tactics to try to get the Speaker and the rest of the House of Representatives to force this bill through so that the real legislation that actually benefits... Go ahead, Senator.
Well, not only that, on Wednesday, after the Tuesday problems in the House, we still had some bills that were alive in the Senate that we had to pass on third reading. So we amended most of the bills that there were 30 bills that were caught up on Tuesday night. And on Wednesday morning, we amended most of those bills onto other bills to try to get everything through and passed. But there were two bills that we couldn't do that with. One was the Water Projects bill, and one was the UI bill, that the unemployment insurance bill that passed today as well. We didn't have bills in the Senate that we could use the title and fit the Water Projects bill and the unemployment insurance bill under the title and meet the constitutional requirements of one subject. But we found two that had passed through the legislature. They were on the governor's desk, and the governor had not signed them yet. And all we had to do was recall those bills, and we could amend those two important bills onto the bills that the governor hadn't signed yet, and they would have flown through that day on that Wednesday of the last day of session. But the Democrats denied us the ability to do that so that they could justify having this special session, because they wanted to have more than just the civil unions bill to call us back into special session.
It was all pretense in order to be able to justify the special session and slip in civil unions along with it.
Well, this provided cover for the governor. I mean, the governor needed something that seemed to be a semblance of importance other than just civil unions. But I think one of the things that we need to take a look at and not discount is how this whole story is playing on the national scope also, and how this fit in with the governor's need to call this special session from a political standpoint.
You know what, Senator Neville? We are going to talk about that very issue right after this. Welcome back, Grassroots Radio Colorado. If you'd like to join us on today's program, 303-477-5600. We are talking about the special session. I have Senator Grantham, Senator Neville, Senator Harvey, and Representative Hulbert in studio with me. And Senator Neville, you had made a very good point at the end of the last segment, so why don't you go ahead and repeat that and then move on from there.
Yeah, thanks, Ken. I think, you know, that one of the key things that we have to take a look is where we're at on the stage here, you know, the whole the national stage. And it's no coincidence that things work out the way they do. President Obama has, delved into this subject of gay marriage and basically given his endorsement for it. The governor turns around and calls a special session. This is a plan that apparently has been signed off on at the highest levels of the Democrat Party, and everybody is along for the ride, whether they want to be or not. So I do think that the governor wanted to see this pass on his own, but also now it's got the focus from the national side too behind it, and they understand that they can't afford to lose too many of these battles like this. I think they picked the wrong one in this case.
So this thing's going on a national level. It's a nationally orchestrated agenda? Does that word work? Anybody
sure.
have a problem with that?
No, not at all. It's an agenda.
It's what it
decision.
Is.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think it's all part of, and you had mentioned in the very first segment, Sandra Fluke, I think is her name. You know, she went to Georgetown University for one reason. She's a 30-year-old woman. She goes to Georgetown University for one reason, and that was to pick this fight. That wasn't orchestrated. You've got Stephanopoulos. I mean, Stephanopoulos. What is it? The Snuffleupoulos?
Stephanopoulos.
I don't really care if I mispronounce his name, but he comes out in a debate and asks Mitt Romney, why do you want to take women's birth control away from him? This whole thing is orchestrated. Now, yeah, go ahead, Senator.
I was going to say, Ken, you know what it seems to be, the more we get out on these issues, and I think the challenge that we have is making sure that we stay bold and true to where we're, to what we believe in. But as we do, I think, and we basically differentiate ourselves from the Democrats on these issues, I think that it shows the weakness the Democrats have of truly understanding the people of this country. I don't think they get it. I don't think they're really in touch with the people of this country. I think they're very good at trying to create these small blocks or these small groups. But when it comes to the whole, when it comes to the base of the country and what makes us go, I think that they're so disconnected from that, from all this other work that they use or that they spend their time doing with all these little bits and pieces and segments and special interest groups, that it really shows on issues like this.
Well, Senator Harvey, you'd made a comment earlier that this whole thing is backfiring and that it was designed, and all of these little divisive wars, if you will, are designed to motivate their base, but it's backfiring. Expand on that a little bit.
Well, I think I don't like to repeat the negative and talk about what their talking points are, but I like to talk about what our talking points are. And what my talking points are is that this is an attack on religion. This is an attack on the right of conscience and the ability for people to exercise their faith the way that they believe is best for them. And I think that people of faith are seeing this for what it is, and it's a direct attack on them, and that they are now not sitting on the couch, not sitting in the pews, and just trying to live their lives and take their kids to school and go to work and do those kinds of things. They are truly scared of what this is that we are talking about. We are talking about an entire party in the United States that thinks it's okay to force people of religious faith to do something against their religion. And that's never happened in the United States before. You heard Kevin talking about SB 93, where it forced hospitals to put on their door a yellow star for all practical purposes, to say, this is who we are. And we have to tell you who we are. Never in American history have we ever had a major political party say that that's okay. And that is what you are seeing right now. And people of faith across the country are rising up and saying, no, not in our country.
You know, we had the PPACA Sebelius mandates earlier this year, and I sponsored Senate Memorial 3, and that became pretty contentious, of course, within the Senate. I mean, we're in the minority, and I look forward to that debate. And we were actually given that debate by Senator Betty Boyd, who thought that it was going to be a great victory for her side. And I don't think they got the victory that they thought they would. We had a very strong debate. We were basically, you know, we maintained our logical position on it, and I think a lot of people started waking up over a period of time. And I think what you're going to see is more and more of that. The other thing that I think that you see that comes out is people in this country are finally saying, no, I'm not going to do that. And when it comes to the right of conscience, I think the most important thing is when people look at somebody else in the eye and say, I am not going to break my right of conscience. I am not going to violate my faith and my beliefs, no matter what.
Last month, I saw a Facebook post on a weekend from Senator Harvey, and he was inviting us to join him and his family at a movie. We went and saw Monumental, which was awesome. I encourage all the listeners to try to see that. But it was a great reminder that people who suffered religious persecution came to this country for freedom and liberty. And I mean, what the whole liberty movement is about, it's encapsulated in that movie. And I was really inspired. And I think it's a great motivation for us today, that we just can't take this as average day-to-day political wrangling. There are fundamental issues at stake here, and we need to stand up and reaffirm ourselves what we believe in and what's important, the reason this country was founded. Senator Harvey.
No, I fully agree. And what has happened is the Democrats have crossed that line. They have crossed that bright line that we as civilized society has said we will never cross, and they have on Senate Bill 93. They have on this civil unions bill that said if you are a Catholic counselor, you have to provide counseling to somebody who violates your religious beliefs. It's one thing to say you can have civil unions. It's another thing to say you have to do something that violates your religious beliefs. And I'm not Catholic, but I'm sorry. That is the First Amendment. That is what our country was founded upon.
And I would say that this Senate Bill 2 and civil unions is going down that same path as far as saying you will do something. And here's what it's doing. It's saying you will accept us, and we will force acceptance at any cost. And we'll do it in a step-by-step fashion. But you're going to accept this. And well, that is still force. And they're using government as force in order to do that.
And, you know, it's interesting. We talk about that, and you had made a comment, Senator Harvey, that you're not Catholic. And I'm not either. But you know what? If they can do it to Catholics, they can do it to whatever denomination or religion that we all are. They can do it to the Mormons. They can do it to the Jews. They can do it to anyone, except, of course, Muslims. Well, you can't do it to Muslims because they can pretty much run free with Sharia law. And so, I don't know. When we come back after the top of the hour, we're going to do a roundtable about some of the good things that did actually come out of the assembly this year. We'll be right back.